reflect a little upon what it means to cultivate a healing space in our meditation and in our lives. I think there are two principal themes that run pretty much through all spiritual and meditative traditions. Not surprisingly, these same two themes are ones that permeate much of our lives. One of those themes is the actuality or the reality of encountering unsatisfactoriness or sorrow or pain in our lives. The other is the theme of liberation or freedom. Now, these two themes are not actually separate. But really, because we encounter suffering or pain in our lives, in our hearts, in our bodies, in our relationships, we seek endlessly, really, in so many different ways and different places to find freedom from suffering, to find freedom from pain. We search in so many different ways and places to find peace, happiness, to find intimacy, acceptance, and love. And in those searches for all of those, what we are often looking for is healing. It seems that suffering, or the encounter with suffering or pain, is actually the catalyst that leads us to seek for freedom and healing. It's almost as if suffering is the birthplace of faith and a beginning of understanding. If there was not suffering, more importantly, if there was really no awareness of what suffering is, we would probably not feel any stirring in our hearts to begin to understand what freedom is. Now, there may be moments in our lives when we feel divorced from wisdom, and we meet suffering with fear and resistance. Life happens to us. None of us are protected from the realities and the changes and the various forms of loss and separation that life brings. Now, when we are divorced from wisdom in those places, we sometimes find ourselves shouting at the world, or shouting at other people, or shouting at ourselves, saying, this shouldn't be happening. Sometimes in meeting that pain or suffering without wisdom, we get caught up in shame or in blame, or in despair or feelings of powerlessness. Or we get caught up, the common way of getting caught up is in avoidance or denial, trying to distance ourselves from what is happening. I think we do come to understand that these responses of blame or resistance or avoidance don't really bring any healing. They don't make any difference at all. In fact, they often add just another layer of pain to what we already experience. It's almost as if there's two levels of suffering. The Buddha was once asked, how can you tell the difference between an enlightened and an unenlightened person? And he gave this example. He said, imagine if a person happened to walk across a field where an archer was firing an arrow, and accidentally that person happened to walk in front of the arrow and got shot in the leg. Well, whether that person was enlightened or unenlightened, it would hurt. Right? The basic reality, it would hurt. He said the difference between an enlightened and an unenlightened person, he said, suppose that person then looked up and saw the archer about to fire another arrow. The unenlightened person would be immediately thinking, this one's going to get me too. I've been here before. I know how much this is going to hurt again. What have I done to deserve this? You know, why do these things always happen to me? That would be the unenlightened person. That would be the extra layer of pain. Whereas this is a Buddha said, an enlightened person would probably just get off the field. When we are caught in resistance or fear, we find ourselves very perversely and unfortunately married and entangled in the very events and circumstances we most want to get rid of. Have you ever noticed in your life that how strangely close we can be to the difficult people in our lives? You know how they hold a special place in our hearts? How much we think about them? How much we imagine them? How many feelings we have about them? I mean, think about someone that you've had an argument with, or, you know, that you felt really resentful towards. Often we think about them more than the people we love. That we can be incredibly, strangely married to the very situations or people we want to get rid of because of the way that we harbor and cherish resistance or avoidance or denial. Now, we can go through these cycles of resistance or blame or shame many times in our lives, and those cycles often begin to teach us. They begin to teach us really the beginnings of wisdom, the beginnings of investigation, the beginnings of looking for a way to be free. It becomes obvious to us that we don't always really learn the lessons of healing. We don't often learn about acceptance and forgiveness and loving kindness and compassion in times in our lives when we're undisturbed. When we're surrounded by people who care for us and flatter us, when our life is like a pond of calm and ease. Have you ever noticed in those times, you know, like we don't really learn any big lessons about acceptance or compassion or loving kindness? We learn them, or rather we are invited to learn them, in the midst of those moments in our lives when we are most challenged, when we most struggle, when we experience pain. You ever notice how easy it is to feel a lot of loving kindness when nobody bothers you? You know, or how easy it is to let go when there's nothing you really want? You know, or it's terrifically easy to feel compassion, you know, when you're surrounded by nobody at all who disturbs you. And it's a kind of an illusory, sometimes it's a kind of an illusory sort of compassion or loving kindness. When I first lived in India, I lived in this very idyllic place, you know, really high up in the Himalayas. And I was really surrounded by the most wonderful people, you know. And a lot of the meditation that I was being taught at that time was about compassion and forgiveness. And I used to sit up there on my mountaintop looking down on India, you know, feeling like I was bursting with compassion for all life. And then one day I had to go to New Delhi and I had to catch the bus. And I went to get on the bus and this bus driver pinched my behind and I hit him. And it was the most extraordinary revelation, you know. I mean, it's not to say that that was necessarily inappropriate to sock him in the jaw. I mean, it might have been quite appropriate. I mean, he stopped doing this thing. However, it might have been more appropriate if that action came out of compassion rather than the reactiveness that it actually came out of. It's in the midst of challenge and pain that we learn and have the possibility of learning the lessons of freedom. Now, wherever there is suffering, there is a need for healing. To be alive is to have the capacity to feel. This is something we share with all life. To be alive is to have the capacity to feel. And that means that we are touched by the changing kaleidoscope of experiences in life that we will all meet. To have the capacity to feel means that we can be delighted and touched and overjoyed and filled with warmth and happiness. To have the capacity to feel means that we are also open to grief, to sadness, to sorrow, to anxiety, to feelings of loss and loneliness. There are many dimensions. You know, sometimes I think it's a good idea to talk about suffering. We don't talk about it. I don't talk about suffering in order to depress you. You know, this is not a meeting of Depressives Anonymous. Sometimes I think it's actually quite a relief to talk about suffering because so much time and energy in our life and in our world is spent trying to pretend it's not happening. You know, all that kind of frantic activity, you know, to cover up and camouflage the reality that countless people are walking around with broken hearts, with feelings of sadness, with fear and with anxiety, and almost like there's this collective collusion of pretense, like this is not happening. Or that if we try hard enough, pretending, we won't see that it's happening. So sometimes it is quite a relief, actually, to talk about suffering. If it happens. It happens. No one's alone in this. It happens, and there is a way of healing. But there are many dimensions to sorrow, and it's not just about what might happen in our bodies. It's not just about extreme feelings of anxiety or loneliness. There is also the suffering that comes in self-judgment, in delusion, in feelings of disconnection, in confusion. You know, the feelings of just not really being at home in reality. The feelings of self-consciousness or anger or hatred. The list is endless. And I don't think anyone's exempt. Sometimes when we begin to open to this seemingly bottomless pit, a nature of pain, we can feel overwhelmed. And sometimes it does feel like waking up in this life is painful. But it's really not nearly as painful as trying to live in denial or trying to live in pretense. And waking up is the beginning of healing. Having the capacity to turn a very gentle and a very undemanding attention to those places in our bodies and in our minds and in our relationships and in our world where there is a need for healing. And there is a need for healing wherever there is suffering. It seems that the first step of healing is to acknowledge, without blame, without resistance, the actuality of pain. The second step of healing is to let go of the habit of fleeing from it, of avoiding it, of denying it, and to begin to explore the reality of this moment. As we do this, as we really approach these places of hurt in our lives, in our world, very directly, sometimes our heart really does begin to open. Beyond the boundaries of our individual experience. And we begin to see that suffering or pain is not just about what happens to me. But that anger, that fear, that hatred, that isolation, that anxiety, these are like universal illnesses. And that they lead to suffering wherever they're found. And it's so easy to forget this. Sometimes when we get lost in pain and grief over losing someone we love or hurt because someone has wounded us or lost in disappointment or rejection, sometimes when that happens and we meet those experiences, what we find happening is that our heart and our world actually begins to contract. And it's really very much me. You know, this is me. We know the painfulness of it. We want to get out. But we often get lost in our story about pain, about how to heal my broken heart, how to heal my body or my anger, how to bring it to an end. And very often when we're contracted in pain or in suffering, the thing that we really find ourselves desperately searching for is some kind of solution, a prescription, a formula, you know, something that'll tell us how to get out of it, how to bring it to an end. Now, moments of suffering in our lives do, of course, ask for wise attention. They do ask for focus and for investigation. And wise attention is very much one of the ingredients of healing. But wise attention is not just about finding solutions. Solutions is not always the same as healing. Solutions sometimes offer a kind of temporary relief. You know, a temporary relief. And sometimes the desire to find solutions is also the desire, in a way, to divorce ourselves from what is actually happening. It's easier in our lives, it seems, to get rid of things or to try and get rid of things than to understand them and to find freedom within them. You know, in the zoo in New York, imagine there is really a zoo in New York City, there was a polar bear called Gus. This happened some years ago, that the zookeeper noticed that Gus the polar bear was starting to engage in neurotic behavior, and that he was swimming back and forth in his pool repetitively, hour after hour after hour. So the zookeepers went to all this trouble to call in all of these animal psychologists from around the world. And in the end, the diagnosis that they came up with was that Gus was bored. So their solution, as the zookeeper said, Gus is bored, we'll give him more toys. And the zookeeper said, hey, it works for us, doesn't it? Nobody happened to notice that here was this polar bear living in New York, as if that wasn't enough to cause any polar bear to be neurotic. Living in a tiny pool after living on the freedom of the sort of ice caps. Fix it. Get away from it. Find some more toys. Pretend it's not happening. I think the path of healing involves a little bit more than just finding solutions. It's a deeper question. And I think the path of healing really involves us asking ourselves, what really is a healing space? What is the inner environment or the inner culture that allows healing to take place? What are the ingredients of healing that apply not only to ourselves, but that will apply to pain wherever and whomever it arises? What is the culture of healing that can bring ease not only to anger or to greed or to conflict, but also to feelings of separation and disconnection? I think when we speak of nurturing a healing space, to think of that or to reflect upon that really requires a very radical change in our own relationship to pain. Instead of looking for solutions or prescriptions or formulas or strategies to get out, we might instead ask ourselves, how can I be at peace with this? What does it mean to be at peace with this feeling, this person, this event, this situation, this memory, this body? What would it mean for us to be at peace with what is happening within us, within our world? What is asked for us to be able to step out of the cycle of resistance and struggle and fear? Healing may not mean that something goes away. Healing may not mean that something comes, that a difficult situation comes to an end. Healing may be much more complex than that. It may be about discovering a way of being at peace with the world, at peace with ourselves, in a way in which we are no longer defined by the struggles we engage in or encounter. Exploring what it means to nurture a healing space is something that really returns us to this moment and the quality of our presence in this moment, the climate of our own heart and mind in this moment. Now, not everything in this life has a solution. We can carry within us wounds from the past that have a long history. We can't undo events that have taken place that have left behind them residues of pain. There is no solution to aging. There's no solution to dying. Sometimes there's no solution to illness. That doesn't mean that we are somehow sentenced to endlessly suffer. What awareness actually tells us is that we are never actually helpless. And that just because something has a long history, it doesn't mean it has a long future. And that is really something important for us to understand. That just because something has a long history, it doesn't mean it has a long future. There's a wonderful verse from Suzuki Roshi when he talks about beginner's mind and the capacity to see things anew in each moment, which is really so much one of the ingredients of healing. So we need to cultivate a beginner's mind. And a beginner's mind is not a closed mind, but actually an empty mind and a ready mind. If your mind is empty, it is always ready for anything, open to everything. In the beginner's mind, there are many possibilities. In the expert's mind, there are few. This applies not only to how we approach our meditation, but also to how we approach these places of pain and struggle in our lives. You know how difficult it is to have a beginner's mind? You know, you have a pain in your knee, and how you come back in the next city and you have a pain in your knee. Oh, there it is again. You know, how you felt dull. You know, you come back in the next city. Oh, dull again, you know. Oh, there it is again. Oh, I've been here before. I know this place. But actually, do we know it? We encounter a person that we've met in the past that perhaps we've struggled with. How do we meet them the next day? Do we see them with openness, with many possibilities? Or do we say, oh, you again, I remember you. I remember every word you said, every gesture you made. Are there many possibilities in that? How really challenging it is to visit each moment in our lives as if it is the first time. But it's really helpful to learn how to do this. Because healing the past really happens through our relationship in the present, through understanding and through the changes that happen in our relationship to pain and the very major shifts that can take place within ourselves in our relationship to how we hold the difficult. Now, nurturing a healing space, this is not a destination that we arrive at, that we somehow become expert at. It is really a moment-to-moment practice. Because life brings us unpredictable moments of struggle and pain. And harmony in our lives is really knowing how to be in touch with what is, not with what used to be, or not with what might be, but learning how in those moments of rejection, how to bring acceptance. In those moments of struggle, how to bring calmness. In those moments when we feel closed down, what does it mean to really open and receive? In those moments when we're really tempted to avoid, what does it mean to stay connected? In many ways, a path of healing is both a path of loving kindness and a path of wisdom. It is a practice of learning to welcome and befriend all things, a practice of generosity, and a practice of letting go. It's a constant moment-to-moment practice of really looking at where we choose suffering and where we choose freedom. We can, I think, very easily recognize that nurturing loving kindness in an environment of healing is not a passive path. It takes a remarkable amount of energy and attention. Actually, it takes far more energy and attention to forgive and to live in a loving way than it does to foster hatred or resentment. One of the primary ingredients of healing and of freedom is acceptance. And we need to be very careful about how we use this word acceptance, because it doesn't mean resignation, and it doesn't mean passivity, and it doesn't mean that everything in the world is okay. But we know very well in our own experience what it feels like when we can't accept someone or something. We know very well in our lives what it feels like not to be accepted. When we can't accept something as it is, it means often that we constantly revisit those areas of pain and struggle. It often means that we constantly revisit something that has already gone by, and sometimes live our life with the mantra of, if only this person was like that, if only this had happened, if only this hadn't happened, or the mantra of should. This is how I should be, this is how you should be. Not being able to accept often means that we find ourselves dwelling and obsessing and being stuck in endless thinking. Often what we're doing in that is looking for ways to change reality. And I don't know if you've noticed, but when you really struggle to change the way things actually are, usually what you end up with is a cup full of frustration and futility. Acceptance is not a surrender of the need for transformation. In many ways, acceptance is the quality that actually allows things to be transformed. It allows things to change. This is really sometimes a very difficult lesson for us to really absorb. The analogy I used, I spoke about it with someone today. I mean, imagine if you walked down the driveway and you found somebody down the driveway, you know, maybe, you know, beating up on one of the dogs or something, you know, their frustration finally got the better of them. So there you are, you're faced with this situation, which is painful. Now, one way of responding would be, of course, to start beating the person who's beating the dog. You know, that, you know, you shouldn't be like this. You know, you're a terrible person, you're a failure, you shouldn't be so violent, as we're kicking their legs. The other way, perhaps, of acceptance would be to acknowledge that this is a place of suffering, something unacceptable is happening, and that there's a need for wise action and for wise speech and for wise intention. And there's a need to stop the unacceptable. But can we do that without either beating ourselves, beating the person, or beating the dog ourselves? Can we do that and still allow the room in our hearts for that person to be accommodated? Can we stop the action? Can we stop the unacceptable without banishing that person from our lives? Where is acceptance needed? Well, it's obviously not needed in those places where there's calmness and intimacy and closeness in our lives. No, acceptance is needed in those places where we most find ourselves struggling with anger, with blame, with rejection. In many ways, that capacity to accept what is frees us from the burden of judgment, frees us in many ways from the past. Sometimes we have done all that we can do outwardly. You know, sometimes events happen in our lives, breakdowns happen in our lives of relationship. Things have happened to us and we have done all that we can do outwardly. You know, perhaps there's no way to change another person. Perhaps there's no way to change the situation or the event that has taken place. This is the place often where acceptance is most difficult. Acceptance doesn't mean trying to forget. It doesn't mean condoning. It doesn't also mean blaming. It means knowing the reality of what has happened, being able to be at peace with that reality. There's a wonderful story of Milarepa. Milarepa was a great Tibetan yogi. He was very famous, actually, for many, many things, including building many houses and being told to knock them down, living on nettles, etc., etc. But Milarepa was a very famous Tibetan yogi. And there's a story that one day, he living in a cave on the mountainside, he went out to gather wood for his fire. And when he came back, he found his cave inhabited by seven demons with eyes the size of saucers and bodies grotesque. Some were making fire, some were grinding grain, and some were performing magical tricks. Milarepa was immediately frightened, and his first thought was, how am I going to get rid of these demons? So first he meditated on his guru, and he tried a few mantras, trying to subdue them. It worked a little bit. Two of the demons disappeared. So then, but there were five remaining, and Milarepa said, oh, well, maybe they need some thanks and appreciation. Maybe they were here before me. So he said, I'll try, still with the intention and the desire to get rid of them. He said, I'll try offering them some loving kindness. You know, so he said to the demons, oh, you're wonderful demons. You know, I'm sure you're very fine, but please would you move on? We worked a little. Three disappeared. Still four remained. So Milarepa thought, something else is needed to try and get rid of these demons. So he tried a different approach. He said to the demons, I am a fine yogi. Said, I've been a fine yogi for many years. I've studied with many fine teachers. I'm a fearless yogi, and you cannot scare me. And so he said, in this quality of fearlessness, he said, well, it's wonderful you demons came today. Come again tomorrow, and we'll talk. Well, it worked a little bit more. Three more remained, but the last and the most vicious of the demons was left. And Milarepa realized that all of these strategies to get rid of were only partially effective. And he was still left with this deepest demon, this most powerful demon. And he began to realize that this is where compassion was truly needed. He said to the demon, demon, if you would stay here longer, that would be fine with me. If you have friends, bring them along. And we'll talk out our differences. And filled with loving kindness and compassion, Milarepa placed himself in the mouth of the demon, but it couldn't consume him, and he vanished like a rainbow. This is a story, of course. However, the symbology of this story is that it is possible to discover a power of loving kindness and compassion that is vaster and bigger than our own demons. Where our demons are, this is where we are asked to let go. Acceptance is this powerful expansiveness that can make space for all things. This powerful expansiveness that can hold pain, despair, and anger in our hearts. Nothing has to happen. Nothing has to go away. Nothing has to end. We learn to let it be. And this is very often where we find peace. Forgiveness is a very significant part of this letting go, this letting be. Forgiveness not only for others who harm us, but also for ourselves. Even in those small moments in our day where we find ourselves hardening our hearts against ourselves and playing what Stephen Levine once called the unfinished symphony. The unfinished symphony. The endless tales of judgment that we have about ourselves and others. How do we hold on to what has already gone by? Mostly through judgment and through anger. You know, so much of our judgments that we find burdensome in our lives come because sometimes we hold within ourselves such an inflated sense of perfection and enlightenment that we expect from ourselves and from others. We need to recognize mostly that pain doesn't get inflicted through perfection and enlightenment. Mostly pain gets inflicted blindlessly, almost choicelessly, through fear, through confusion, and through ignorance. And this is suffering. Fear and confusion and ignorance is suffering. It's not an invitation then to further blame and further judgment, but invitation to understanding. We learn a lot about forgiveness in a retreat, in our relationship to ourselves. All those moments when we find ourselves standing in judgment. You know, I'm bad, I'm wrong, I'm unacceptable, I'm inadequate. All the words that we use and all the associations that we use to spin a kind of web of imprisonment. Within those places of judgment, we can also learn to bring loving kindness and healing, to see them as the thoughts that they are. I mean, one of the wondrous things in our lives is that we have so many thoughts. But the more wondrous thing is that we give so much authority to our thoughts to determine our well-being and happiness. Have you noticed sometimes, you know, in retreats, everybody has little accidents, you know. Places, you know, where we feel very self-conscious. You know, maybe you go in the dining room and you drop your spoon. You know, that, like in the grand scale of life, you know, this is not a major disaster, right? This is a very small event. However, sometimes we drop our spoon in the dining room and immediately the mind starts going, oh, everyone saw how unmindful I was. You know, probably every single person now here knows what a terrible yogi I am. And we start blaming and blaming and blaming ourselves. You know, in the Dhammapada it says the mind is the forerunner of all things. All that we are arises with our thoughts. With our thoughts, we create this world. In that moment, we really do create a world for ourselves. But did we really drop that spoon? Because, you know, we got up this morning, that morning and said, oh, it's a good day to be unmindful. You know, when you come and sit down on a cushion, you know, and maybe you experience, you know, a sitting that is difficult, you know, or, you know, you find it very challenging, how easy it is to be judgmental. You know, but how many of you got up this morning and said, oh, this is a great day to be depressed, or, you know, this is a great day to make a fool of myself, you know, or this is a great day to be anxious all day. We don't choose to do it. Often those events and those experiences come forth within ourselves what is really asked for in those moments? I mean, are they really helped by this extra layer of blame and judgment? Or are those moments really healed by the power of acceptance and loving kindness? One of the great gifts I find in this teaching is that no one is blamed for ignorance. You know, no one is blamed for ignorance. So there is one thing about consciously and intentionally perpetuating harm. But there are also so many acts and so many events and so many breakdowns in our lives that come through confusion and misunderstanding. It's not to blame for that, but to look for the places of healing and understanding. Now, letting go is a significant part of healing, but I think sometimes you need to be really, really realistic about letting go. You know, it's not about some major breakthrough. Sometimes it's easier to hold in our hearts the words, how do we let something be? How can we let it be? Not adding anything, not subtracting anything, but to let it be. This is often the place where real healing begins. To let something be. Sometimes I think it's helpful not to think so much in terms of healing something or someone or ourselves, but actually much more helpful to think in terms of how do we cultivate on a moment-to-moment level a healing space within ourselves. A healing space within ourselves. How do we find the acceptance, the loving kindness, the compassion, the capacity to let things be on a moment-to-moment level? To explore that pathway, to really explore that pathway, is really to begin to understand not only how to heal ourselves, but also how to heal our world. We have a couple of moments quietly together.